Elementary music teacher friend, you love what you do, but you might feel unappreciated and, in fact, unseen some days. You may even feel like you're on a music teacher island and just want to connect with other music teachers who can relate to both your struggles and wins when it comes to teaching elementary music. I get you and understand completely the feelings you're having. That's why each and every week, the Elementary Music Teacher Podcast will provide you with solo and guest episodes that will help you realize you're not alone in your music teaching journey. Throughout each episode, my goal is for you to be able to walk away with actionable steps and ideas to help you feel like you're ready to take on the new week with whatever challenges may be thrown your way. Hi, I'm your host, Jessica Paresta, and I'm so glad you're here. Whether you're at home, in your car, in the shower, or wherever else you're listening, grab your cup of coffee or whatever other beverage is nearby and listen in to the Elementary Music Teacher Podcast.
I'm Matthew Woods, host of Leading Out of the Woods, a part of the Education Podcast Network. Just like the show you're listening to now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.
Hey, music teacher friend, I want to let you know about a free guide called 5 Steps to Simplifying Your Lesson Planning. We know as an elementary music teacher how stressful it can be planning lessons every single week for all the grade levels you teach that need to meet the state or national standards, that will reach different learning styles, and that are also fun and engaging for your students. If you've had thoughts like, am I doing this whole lesson planning thing right? Then check out this guide. It will help you with lesson planning with ease. So simply head to subscribe.thedomesticmusician.com/simplifying lesson planning or check out the link in the show notes. Well, hi friends, happy December. As you're listening to this, we are midway through the month. As a music teacher, you are probably in survival mode right now, and you're in the midst of programs, performances, crazy high energy from students, all the winter parties, and you are just feeling like you're just kind of staying afloat. And that is very, very normal for this time of the year. So I am so excited looking into 2023. I'm bringing the podcast back every week. And I, at the time of this recording, am finished with grad school. I had to take a little bit of a step back from keeping up the pace I was keeping up when it came to the podcast because I was just overloaded with other work going on, but also grad school was just a lot in a good way, but it is finished. I am graduating and I'm so excited about that. So in 2023, be on the lookout for brand new guests, brand new solo episodes that will now come back every week. So I'm super excited about that. Today we're talking about, speaking of talking, talking less during instructional time as a music teacher. This is something I've wanted to talk about for a while and for a couple reasons. There are many times as a music teacher, you will lose your voice. And a lot of times it's very unexpected where you wake up and your voice is gone and you're just kind of like, oh gosh, what do I do today? I really had a lot planned and I can't do any of that because I can't talk. But on the other hand, there is another reason I want to record this episode because I truly believe that when you are doing less talking in your music room, sometimes you will see more instruction happening. And we're going to get into what I mean in this episode. But I want to say that you're going to be amazed at how well your students pay attention when they do have to completely focus on what you're doing and not just on what you're saying. I found this out kind of like this, what I shared at the beginning, when I did lose my voice one day and I had to just point or non-verbally give instructions. And I have never had a quieter class periods than I did that day. So it was kind of cool and kind of eye-opening. And I intentionally planned some days like that after where I was able to do a lot less talking with my students on purpose. So we're going to get into how to do that. But I do want to remind you, you already know this, you are singing and talking all day, every day. And it is very easy to lose your voice, even if you drink water all day, even if you do take breaks from speaking and singing. So try to plan for days when you are doing less talking to not only save your voice, but to change things up in your classroom a bit, to change the pace, to kind of surprise your students with the way you're usually doing things, and it's going to be different on a certain day. So there are three main points I'm going to get into today. First, we're going to talk about instructional time. And then we're going to talk about transitional times in the music room. And then we're going to talk about certain activities you can do. Instructional time. Let's go there first. Instead of teaching and having students sit still, have them doing more. And what I mean by this is shorter instructions. For example, do this, play this, watch this, sing this, copy me, stand up, sit there. So shorter instructions. Instead of my first year teaching, I was very guilty of this. Today we're going to do this, and how we're going to do this is we're going to get this instrument and we're going to sit here and then we're going to go over here. And then by the time I got like my 1 minute spiel, I had lost about 3/4 of the class. They were like, whoop, I have no idea what you're talking about. So less instructions. When you're saying something like, do this, you are showing them with your actions what you're wanting them to do, whether that is pointing at somewhere in the classroom, whether you're holding an instrument and you're showing them how to play it. Do this, and then you play a rhythm, and they're playing it, and then you point, and they're playing it back to you. So shorter verbal instructions while you're doing something along with those shorter verbal instructions. I want you to try to shift to being more of the facilitator instead of the teacher. And how you do this is incorporating more small group and partner work, whether that is in centers, whether that's during practice time, if they're practicing something together, whether it's movement activity, a dance, practicing rhythms, whatever that might look like, or playing a game or activity. You're facilitating the learning. You are showing. You are teaching still, remember, with shorter phrases, less verbal instructions, and then you're facilitating the learning. You can walk around and even instead of saying, no, not like that, like this, you're maybe pointing or redirecting by showing them something, or you are giving them an example, whether you're showing them with something you're holding up, whether you are, like I said earlier, you're playing a rhythm, whether you're clapping it or playing it on an instrument, where you're doing, this takes practice, by the way. It's not just like overnight, because you're so used to giving instructions with your words that you're like, wait, but how do I pivot and not give instructions with my words? But we're going to get into more of how to do that. But when you are doing more facilitating, where students are engaged in learning, you're basically walking around listening. You're assessing. You are making sure students are on task. They are still learning. They are practicing something that was already taught, but you're not spending the entire class period talking. Every class period, for that matter, is going to look different. There's going to be some class periods where you are giving more instructions because you're teaching something new. If it's a brand new concept, obviously, you will need to spend a little bit more instructional time on that. But with that said, I still am in the viewpoint of students, especially in the music room, don't need to sit still for very long. You are going to lose their attention. You are going to lose their focus. And so when you're giving instructions, instead of teaching it while they're sitting still, when you're going over a concept like steady beat, for example, obviously explain what a steady beat is, but in the music room, students should experience what a steady beat is, practice what a steady beat is, more than just learning the vocabulary behind it, because they will retain it and remember it more by doing, not just hearing. So when you're facilitating the learning, they're practicing concepts being taught, and you're not just teaching them about it. You are facilitating the learning by the activities they're doing. I also want to talk about during instructional time, use more silent signals. I kind of talked about this a minute ago, point at what you're wanting them to do. Point at individual students who you're wanting to practice maybe an echo rhythm after you. Put your hand by your ear to signal listen to what you're about to do. Or point when you're pointing at yourself, meaning you're going first and then your palms go up where you're pointing at the students, they go second. So like, for example, I'm pointing at myself. I know you can't see me, but I'm pointing at myself and then I might go, my hands go out, and that means the students are echoing it after me. So think of ways you can use more silent signals. Another way you can do this is if you are putting students in small groups, maybe you hold up the number one. And after you hold up the number one, you're pointing at maybe, or you're touching the shoulder of, let's say, four students. And when you're like, you're touching shoulder of student number one and you hold up a number one and then you point at where you want them to go. You put your hand on the shoulder of student number two, you hold up a number one, point at where you want them to go until you get through student four. So that way they know where to go. The cool thing is when you're modeling by doing and not just saying, when you're quiet and you're signaling where to go quietly, you're going to notice your students walk to where they need to be quieter. Because they're just that environment you're creating by being quiet. They're kind of feeding off of that energy. Not always. This is not like a perfect situation, but it is amazing what happens when students see you being quiet. They're kind of like, oh, wait, I guess we're being quiet today. So they kind of want to do what you're doing. It just naturally happens. If you do lose your voice during instructional time or before you get to school for that matter, try a play-along video. Maybe there is something you can pull up on the smart board, or maybe you're using more technology that day. You're just pivoting and adjusting your lesson plans, which we've talked about many times on this podcast. Nothing is ever set in stone. So maybe you are adjusting what you're doing and you're bringing in maybe Chromebooks that day, or maybe you already have student computers in your classroom, or like I mentioned, a smart board, and you're doing more play along videos, or you're doing other technology activities, or maybe there's a dance video you can pull up. Or if students have been working on a folk dance, maybe you pull up a video where they can practice it along with the video. Maybe that's a day you also pivot and you can do centers, where maybe you hadn't had it planned or you had center activities planned for the following week or 2 weeks from wherever that day is, and you do that during this class period instead. Also, you can do student-led instruction. Bring up students who you know are confident in the content you've already taught. Maybe it's a review day, or maybe you had planned to teach something new, but instead you're pivoting to do working on concepts that you've already covered since you can't speak very well because you don't have a voice. So bring up students who can lead the instruction in various ways. For whatever you had planned, think of students who can lead that, or they're leading in their center groups, or they're leading in small group activities and other things like that. So during instructional time, those are just a few ideas I wanted to share. So to review real quick is less talking, more doing, shorter instructions with the words you're saying, be more of the facilitator sometimes and not so much the teacher. Think of small group and partner work and center activities where students are able to participate in groups where you're getting to facilitate that. More silent signals that you are signaling for what you want your students to do. And then if you lose your voice, think of various activities you can do for that. Point number two is transitional times in the music room. Obviously, there's a lot going on in the music classroom, and obviously it depends on what you have planned that day. But during any point of the music classroom, students will be going from sitting to standing to an instrument to a center to writing rhythms to practicing in small groups to doing a folk dance to whatever else you have planned. And there's a lot of moving parts to what you have planned throughout the class period. So here are some ways to talk less during transitional times. We've already talked about giving signals, so this goes for transitional times in the music room as well. So instead of me saying, like, all the students are sitting on the floor in their spots, instead of me saying, row one, stand up, go back to the rhythm instruments, pick out a rhythm instrument, make sure it's either rhythm sticks or a kabasa or an egg shaker. No, instead of doing all that, I'm going to signal what I want students to do. I may have an egg shaker at the front of the classroom, and I am with my finger, I'm kind of scanning over row one. If you have your students in rows, if not, think of how you can do this. But I'm scanning row one. Let's say there's six students sitting in row one, and I'm just kind of with my finger and my eyeballs looking at students in the eyes is very big, by the way. That's a great nonverbal communication tool. And I'm scanning over the six students. My finger is going down the line to signal you six as I'm looking at them. I'm like pointing with my finger like you can see me. But anyway, so I'm signaling to these students. I'm scanning them with my finger as my eyes are looking at each of them. Then I hold up the egg shaker and I point to the back of the room, meaning you six go grab one of these, and then they go get it. And then as they're back there, I point back at their seats, meaning to sit down. So that is what I mean by signal for what you want your students to do. This can go for a lot of different things. If the whole class, let's say you need them to make a circle for a folk dance or for an activity, whatever you're doing that day, then I would say, I'm like with my finger again, I'm scanning over the whole class, meaning all of you, kind of going one, two, three, four rows. And I'm scanning with my finger and looking at all the students, and I'm going to draw a circle in the air. And then I move my hands as to say, stand up. And then I'm going to do it again, circle. And I walk to the circle and I signal again, saying circle around me. At first, students, if this is new, they're going to look at you like you're a crazy person and be like, what is she doing? Like, why is she not just speaking what she wants us to do? But you're going to be surprised how quickly students catch on. Then what's cool is if students start going, she means make a circle, you can say, shh. And put your finger over your mouth like, no, we're going to do this nonverbally. Students are going to catch on. So that is a way to do transitions nonverbally, is to signal what you want your students to do. Another thing, and I mentioned this a minute ago, but when you're touching the shoulder of students where you want them to be, where you want them to go, whether it's small groups or centers, this is great for transitional time as well. If you're wanting them to transition from whole group instruction to a small group activity, touch their shoulders, signal where you want them to go, and also with partner activity, you can touch one student's shoulder, another student's shoulder, and point your fingers towards each other, meaning face each other. And you can also signal whether you want them to stand up or sit down. Another idea for transitional time is to hold up picture cards or point at pictures on a smart board or a computer of what instrument you want students to get. So that is a great way to tell students what you want them to do without using your fingers so much or your hands so much. Just have some cards held up. So for example, if you're wanting students to transition to the xylophones and you're wanting a group of five kiddos to go over there, you hold up the picture of the xylophone, metallophones, glockenspiels, whatever it might be. And then you look at the student you're wanting to go there, hold up the card, signal to the student to walk to that instrument. That's another idea, is to just hold up some cards or point at the instrument or to have it pulled up on a technology device. And another idea for transitional times in the music room is to have instructions and concepts written out instead of just saying them. I understand every single one of you listening to this has different requirements from your administration or your district about how much you need to have written out for students to see. Sometimes you need to write out every single grade level, every concept the students are going over, I can statements, objectives posted, all the things. So think about what you're required to do first of all. But what I'm getting at here is the bare minimum where you're writing instructions and concepts instead of speaking them simply. So yes, the objectives, concepts, I can statements, all that is separate from this. What I mean is, for example, you're going to write out things like just on the board, stand up or go to centers. Or you're going to have written out, and maybe this is slides. So you're transitioning the slides each time you want students to do something. Or maybe students already know what group they're in. So let's say you, on this Google slide you created, you have group two, head to the, why is my brain not working? The drums. Group two, head to drums. And they know 15 minutes in, head to the drums. Maybe you have it detailed like that, where they know what's happening throughout the class time. So that's just another idea, is to have the instructions and concepts written out instead of always speaking them or saying, today we're going to do this. They already have it up there. They know they're going to learn about steady beat because you're not just verbally telling them, it's up there. And they know what they're doing to steady beat. And maybe they know what groups they're in and what they're doing in the groups because you have it written out. So to repeat, for transitional times in the music room, signal for what you want your students to do. You're going to touch the shoulder of students that are going to small group or partner activities and signal with your hands what you're wanting them to do, whether face each other, stand up, or sit down. You're also going to maybe hold up picture cards or point at pictures on a smart board or computer of what instruments you want students to go to. And then you're also going to have instructions and concepts written out in a simple and easy to understand way for your students. The last thing I want to touch on is activities to do. I am not going to cover every activity ever that you can do in the music room, but what I do want to do is cover a couple that you can 100% do non-verbally. So let's talk about starting class with body percussion or a movement activity. One thing I 100% love to do, and I know I've mentioned it on this podcast several times, is to start class by having kiddos do something with their bodies. I completely believe that when students are doing something with their hands or with their bodies, they are not only able to focus better and tune in better to what you're about to do in the music room and to get prepared and ready, they are not able to distract their neighbor and their friends next to them as much or talk because their brains are focused on something with their hands. So start class with body percussion or movement when you can. Show them what you want them to do the first time. Maybe if it's a full, let's say, ABACA body percussion rondo, you are going to show them the A section. And then the next time they come in, you're just going to start doing it. And they're going to jump in and do it with you. The next class period, maybe you're showing them the B section. And then they're going to jump in and do it with you. But you're not speaking. You're just showing them what you want them to do. And then maybe you're doing, I don't know, 4-beat phrase at a time. And they're doing it after you. One part of four beat measure at a time, one measure at a time, and they're echoing it after you until you complete the whole phrase. And then they're going to know the A section. And then the next class period, B section, the next class period, C section. And then eventually you put it all together. And eventually it just becomes your body percussion warm-up. Same thing with movement. When they walk into the music room, and we all know getting them into the dang music room is hard sometimes. The hallway is sometimes when kids are the noisiest. So guess what? You can start some body percussion stuff in the hallway. You can start some movement stuff in the hallway non-verbally before they even get into the classroom. This is something you can do it quietly. You can, instead of clapping loudly, you can just have them, you can be silently doing this. Look down the line to see who's joining you. And what you can do is the students are quietly doing something with you, and then you're going to switch it up and then you start patting. When you're looking down the line, you point at the students who are doing it, and then you signal to the door for them to walk into the room. Point at the student doing it, signal for them to walk into the room until you get to the end of the line. That's one thing that works really well. And then if they're talking in the class, you signal them to come right back into the hallway. It only takes a couple of times to do this before students understand, oh my gosh, she's going to send me back out if I talk, so I need to be quiet. So we're getting into some classroom management stuff today as well. So when you're doing something with movement, let's say you want to start with some calm movement activities. I'm talking very soft music. Maybe students are moving quietly in their own space. Maybe you've handed them a scarf and they're moving with a scarf and you're showing them what you want them to do with it, whether it's catching it in the air, whether it's pretending to paint with a paintbrush in the air, which I learned that at my ORF training, by the way, whether it is they are turning in a circle with their paintbrush, whether it is whatever else you want them to do, you're showing them these movement ideas non-verbally. They are literally doing what you want them to do by just watching you do it. So that is one or two different activities, body percussion and movement. Show them, don't tell them. Another thing is when doing a rhythm instrument activity, begin by playing a pattern and then point at the students to signify it's their turn. When students are playing from written notation, point at the board and then point back at the students, meaning here's the rhythm, play it. And you can count like 1, 2, 3, 4, and then point at them to begin. So those are a couple of activities to do. You can definitely do a lot more activities than just body percussion and movement and instruments non-verbally, but these are a couple to help get you started. So if you have any questions about anything I talked about in today's episode, make sure you just let me know. Shoot me a message on Instagram at Jessica Paresta. And also, I forgot to mention, make sure you check out the blog post that's in the show notes that goes right along with this episode that you can read and, you know, bookmark it to read as many times as you want, because everything I presented in this episode is in that blog post as well. Have an amazing day. Enjoy your winter break, and I will be back soon.
Well, hey there. Thank you so much for listening into the Elementary Music Teacher Podcast. There is an exclusive Facebook group just for listeners of this podcast and any elementary music teacher called the Elementary Music Teacher Community Facebook group. Come on over and join us there, where we have conversations around the podcast episodes and encourage each other each and every week. And also head to my website, thedomesticmusician.com. I have some free resources there that you can download to help you gain traction in your classroom today, as well as the blog and the membership site and all kinds of other goodies to help you keep going in your music teaching journey. I cannot wait to keep connecting with you and encouraging you and spurring you on in your journey of teaching elementary music. Hang in there, have an amazing week, and I will see you soon.